sexless quality.
But the important thing here is the group of women.
Nari gana manohari, sundari vrinda mohanaha. Sundari vrinda, vrinda we know, bhakta vrinda is group of devotees. This is sundari vrinda. The group of beautiful women, mohanaha, he attracts. This is nari gana manohari. And the verse here is 10.21.22 in the Bhagavatam. Krishnam niriksha vanitotsava rupashilam. Krishna's beauty and character create a festival for all women. And in 10.90.26, Shruta matropi yahastrinam prasayakarshate manaha urugayo rugito va pashyanti nam chakim punaha. The Lord, whom countless songs glorify in countless ways, forcibly attracts the minds of all women who simply hear about him. What to speak then of those women who see him directly? So this quality of Krishna has been demonstrated in his pastimes. Lord Ram had one wife, Krishna has many, because that's his natural quality. Nari gana manohari. Another one, Tvam chumbako si madhava lohamai noona mangana jati dhavati tatastatosau yato yataha kridaya bhamasi. O Madhav, you are a magnet, and certain women are iron. Wherever you wander in play, they run after you. So this is his quality. Another one that this chapter demonstrates is samruddhiman, prosperous. Mahasampatti yukto yo bhavet esha samruddhiman. He who possesses great treasure is called prosperous. And though I neglected to copy the Sanskrit here, but the English is, O subduer of Mura, and I don't know how this number was calculated, but 560 million yadus are serving you. Your 8 treasures are raining all wealth. 900,000 pure palaces are shining in glory. Who would not be astonished on seeing your wealth? Nitya nutanaha, next quality. Sadanubhuyam bhuyamano pikaroti ananubhutavat vismayam madhuribhir yahasuprokto nityanutanaha. He who astonishes by appearing to be previously unrelished, although he has already been relished with his sweet qualities, is called ever fresh. Krishna is ever fresh. We relish him, his sweet qualities, but every time we encounter his qualities again, they still feel sweet. Ever fresh. Nitya Nutanaha. This is the first canto, 11th chapter, 33rd verse. And this is describing the 16,000 wives directly. Yadyapi asau parshvagato rahogatas tathapi tasyangri yugam navam navam pade pade ka virameta tat padat chalapi yat shri na jahati karhichit. Although Lord Shri Krishna was constantly by their sides, as well as exclusively alone, his feet appeared to them to be newer and newer. The goddess of fortune, although by nature always restless and moving, could not quit the Lord's feet. So what woman can be detached from those feet, having once taken shelter of them? So the context here is, for this verse, is that Krishna entered his palaces, and when he entered, they were in public, the servants and the children, and the wives had not seen him for forever. And so they at once got up from their seats, covered their faces, but the insuperable ecstasy, Prabhupada translates, was so strong that the queens who were shy first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. They then embraced him visually, then they sent their sons to embrace him, in brackets, which is equal to personal embracing. But O chief, amongst the brigus, although they tried to restrain their feelings, they shed tears. The next quality is sarva siddhi nishevitaha. Sva vashakhila siddhihi syat sarva siddhi nishevitaha. Sva vasha akhila siddhihi syat. He who controls all mystic powers is called served by all siddhis. Krishna is served by all siddhis. Rupa Goswami gives the example of 10.14.18, which where Lord Brahma prays. Of course, this is for the expansions in Vrindavan, but the same principle applies to the expansions in Dwaraka. Have you not shown me today that both you yourself and everything within this creation are manifestations of your inconceivable potency? First you appeared alone, then you manifested yourself as all of Vrindavan's calves and cowherd boys, your friends. Next you appeared as an equal number of four-handed Vishnu forms who were worshipped by all living beings, including me. And after that you appeared as an equal number of complete universes. Finally, you have now returned to your unlimited form as the Supreme Absolute Truth, one without a second. So these are the different qualities, and I think Rupa Goswami doesn't touch on them, but there are many other qualities that also can be seen in this pastime. I mean, one question comes up, why did he marry the 16,108 wives? And the answer Prabhupada gives in various places is that these women, by societal standards, were fallen, or could be considered fallen. They were kidnapped by Narkasura for his satisfying his desires. And so there was nobody respectable who was going to marry them. But because they had constantly focused on Krishna's lotus feet, they had performed all kinds of austerities and penances. They were not ordinary women. So Krishna satisfied their desires, disregarding social conventions. And so this is his mercy, his compassion. Bhakta Vatsala, his desire to satisfy his devotees' desires. And so in these situations, Krishna completely disregards social conventions, and he doesn't care whether the people in society today are deriding him for his pastimes. I mean, we can say whatever we want about Krishna, criticize him and so on, but it doesn't hurt him, doesn't touch him in any way, because he's sada nirastu kuhakam. All illusion is always rejected from him, so what does he care? He can say what you want, go to hell for it. But of course, for the devotees, as seen here, this is a matter of relishing. Now, so I want to close here by explaining Rupa Goswami's concluding comments on these qualities. So Krishna is classified into four types: Dhirodatta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, and Dhirodhatta. His qualities can be classified like this. Dhirodatta is the person who is inscrutable, modest, tolerant, merciful, determined in vows, who obscures others' pride, is not boastful, is strong. That's Dhirodatta. This is Lord Ram, Krishna in the mood of Lord Ram. But Dhira Lalita is something else altogether. You could translate it as reckless, playful. So Dhira Lalita is one who is clever, endowed with fresh youth, skillful at joking, free of worries. He is controlled by his devotees. And Rupa Goswami says it seems like a contradiction. You've got Dhirodatta, you got Dhira Prashanta, and then you're mixing that with Dhira Lalita. It seems like, how can one person have all these qualities? Lord Ram didn't exhibit Dhira Lalita. He didn't play, have amorous pastimes with young married women, or girls, not women. And then Rupa Goswami quotes Krishna's pastimes with Radharani here. But finally he says, Krishna also is Dhirodhatta, haughty, the person who shows envy, pride, deceit, anger, fickleness, and boastful nature. In his Vrindavan pastimes playing with his friends, he can boast of his powers and so on. Or when he's fighting with Kala Yavana, Rupa Goswami quotes how he is angry and calling in names, oh frog, things like that. Although Lord Rama also did that to some extent in the battle with Ravana. So Rupa Goswami concludes by saying, let's see if I can find this. Some of the qualities listed above are contradictory. Though contrary, their existence in Krishna is not impossible because of his unrestricted powers. One should never find any fault in the Lord. Though the qualities are contrary, he can resolve them all completely. And the way he resolves them is he manifests them as required. One person manifests all these different qualities in according to the desires of his devotees, depending on the context. He's not unidimensional. And Rupa Goswami explains this verse from the Kurma Puran, which says, the Lord is not gross, nor is he subtle. But he is both gross and subtle. He is without color, but he is blackish with red at the edges of his eyes. He possesses contrary qualities by his powers. So if God was to be pigeonholed into our conception of morality and our conceptions of what God should do and not do, then he's not much of a God. Because we can think of the perfect person, you could say Superman, perfect morality, you know, the movies, that's all they're about. Although these days, movies are more not so black and white, but in the old days, the black and white movies were black and white when it came to the characters. John Wayne on his horseback, he always did the right thing, never put a misstep. It's not difficult to imagine such a person. But Krishna is not to be captured by just imagination. He transcends all our imagination, our mental capacity. And he does things that are incomprehensible unless somebody who is in touch with him directly, like Rupa Goswami or Srila Prabhupada, can explain to us what his real position is and how limited we are in passing judgment over him. And then once we enter devotional understandings of Krishna's pastimes, then they just become relishable, as you can see here. Rupa Goswami is relishing them and helping us relish them. So I'll stop here. Comments and questions? Dhammaraj Prabhu.
I was just thinking that when we are in a preaching mood, as we are here, discussing Lord Krishna and his queens like that, that it's important that we make the qualifying statement, like how we talked about Krishna and his 16,108 wives. It's, for me, I feel that's important that we qualify that statement by explaining that Krishna expands himself that many times, mm-hmm. and it's not that he's standing alone when 16,108 surrounds him.
Right.
Also, that when we're talking about, you know, different incarnations, like Lord Ramchandra, for example, I was just thinking during your class, this thought came to mind that Lord Ramachandra stood within the laws and established. Lord Krishna, he went above the law to establish the law. So, like, for example, you have here in the material world, like you have the police force, you know, you have these patrols and whatever. Everybody, they have to go within speed limits. They can go any limits. There's no charge for them as long as they're doing it to establish the law. So Krishna's pastime transcends, from just one angle of vision, that he transcends in that way to establish the law per se by performing all these different inconceivable activities. Mm-hmm. That is both wondrous, and many of your examples there is in like relation to women, how, you know, women, how they see the Lord in that kind of vision. Men may be a little different, but it's all astonishing to both parties. It's astonishing, it's wondrous, it's amorous, it's bewildering. So yet at the end of the day, if one honestly studies the Bhagavatam, then they can only come to one conclusion, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and our connection is through service. Just want to share that point.
Thank you.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's stated that he, his foremost role was to enact pastimes with his devotees, and killing demons, establishing dharma and stuff are secondary. Establishing dharma, killing demons, and so forth. His secondary, his foremost role was to enact pastimes with his devotees. I don't know if you can recall that.
Yeah. Yajna Sankirtanair Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. I mean, these pastimes are established
are performed also, you could say, to establish para dharma, bhakti, transcendental dharma. We are discussing this in the purview of bhakti, devotional service. If Krishna didn't perform these pastimes, we would have nothing to discuss. Who would we love? What would we know about him? What qualities would we know about God? So, yeah. That's absolutely correct. I would say that devotional service is transcendental, and Krishna is establishing devotional service, the transcendence of devotional service, through his leelas. But at the same time, he does not reject, you know, the apara dharma, the varnashram dharma, local culture. And every now and then he transgresses the bounds of those to establish para dharma, but also in this he is establishing, you have to behave as a proper henpecked husband, assuming that's dharma. Prabhupada writes, and taking care of your children and doing your activities, and as a king, being fair to your subjects and so on. It's very interesting. It's all mixed together. It's like you can't separate the sugar from the water. It's mixed together. For example, when he takes the water of Narad Muni's feet on his head, one could interpret that in the context of Varnashram Dharma, of the Brahmin. Brahmin has to be honored. But actually, it is an example of Paradharma, that the devotee has to be honored. So it's all mixed. It's hard to see where one ends. And he also speaks dharma to the gopis. When he plays the flute, he calls them, and then he starts to preach dharma. What are you doing? It's very interesting. I think all his pastimes, in all the scriptures, even the Bhagavad Gita, they juxtapose material dharma with transcendental dharma. He talks about karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga, all material things. Then he talks about bhakti and establishes the supremacy. So that, I think, is his unique uniqueness. I think. There's a hand up at the back. Yes. Mataji's question.
As you mentioned, he was henpecked. Yeah. Playing like a henpecked husband doesn't mean that he's henpecked. Because when you play with children and grandchildren, that doesn't mean it's really henpecked.
No. But Prabhupada uses this word in the Krishna.
Yeah, I just want to elaborate on that word henpecked. In the 6th canto, it is mentioned that a henpecked man cannot make spiritual advancement.
Hmm.
And it literally means that the husband has the final say. Has the final say, you know, with decisions and things that is going on in the Grihastha ashram. Although she might be right sometimes, she doesn't lose a spiritual benefit by following what the husband says to do. So, if the husband is not like that, he's not stringent and rigid, then he cannot make spiritual advice.
I think the understanding of the word henpecked is not that Krishna is without a backbone and just going along with whatever his wife is saying.
No, nothing wrong with that.
What it means is that he is caring.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned he plays a life, so that's okay.
Yeah, he's caring. He cares for his wives, and he provides for their needs. That's I think the meaning of that word. That's how Prabhupada is using it. Yeah. Anything else? Next question? Mataji, there.
I was listening to a tape, and Prabhupada actually said Krishna was acting as a henpecked husband when he went to the heavenly planet and got the Parijata plant for Satyabhama. He said, you know, whatever role Krishna took, he was perfect. As a child, Mother Yashoda, he was a perfect child. As a husband to the wives, he was a perfect husband. So whatever role he did, it's perfect. So if we are looking to Krishna, you know, to be a husband when he's a child, you'll find controversy in his behavior because he has a different role. So Krishna is just, Prabhupada was just saying that Krishna is so perfect, whatever he does is perfect. But you have from that angle, as a husband, as a child, you know. So
contextual. You have to see it in the context.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's what Rupa Goswami also explains here, that
depending on the context, he acts in certain ways. So he's not limited by that he has to be a certain type every time. But what people do is they juxtapose those two contexts together and they get confused. Well, this is immoral. Or even in this context, it's the same context, but he's showing perfect human behavior, but he's marrying 16,000 wives. How is that perfect? So he can be bewildering even in a given context.
Well,
so,
Prabhupada is saying a tape. I'm trying to think what tape it is still in my car. Mm-hmm. But Prabhupada is saying that he acts as God. He is God. So he does things like this. He'll marry 16,108 wives. But at the same time, when you take his, you know, the details of his behavior,
right,
is perfect.
Right, yeah.
So that's what we're looking at. He comes to this world for two things. One, to show he's God.
Yeah.
And the second, to show good behavior.
Yeah.
So just like you were saying, the example with the gopis, when he gave them good advice, a chaste young girl should go home, shouldn't be out late. That's perfect advice for somebody who's looking for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's the Supreme Personality of God and he had to reciprocate with the devotees, the gopis, because of their love. It's a really nice tape. I've listened to it over 10 times. But every time I listen to it, Prabhupada is, you know, saying the same point, how Krishna is so perfect. But he said, any situation you take, any situation is the perfect behavior.
Thank you. Thank you. Madhumati Madhu.
I kind of remember, it's not very clear, but quite a while ago I was hearing this pastime about Krishna getting the parijata. And I think in the purport, Prabhupada said, he said that Indra, he was henpecked. And whereas Krishna wasn't. And it, naturally in my mind I was thinking, well, it seems like Krishna is henpecked, you know, but Krishna Prabhupada saying, you know, clearly that Indra is henpecked, but Krishna is not. And then he says that Krishna was reciprocating with his devotee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point he was making, he made there when he got the parijata for Satyabhama, saying that that's how he described that. It was a reciprocation, not that he was henpecked, but again, the point you were making, caring, you know.
Yeah.
I had one
question. Yeah, I mean, a husband caring for his wife is not bad for his self-realization. It's not going to interfere with decent human behavior. Is not an impediment to advancement in devotional service. It's actually a support. One has to have a heart that cares for others. Otherwise, one just becomes a gyani, not a devotee.
Thank you. One question I was thinking was that generally, like you're mentioning, that people, they worship Lord Ram and they see, you know, with an Indian background, they see him as Maryada Purushottam, and with Krishna they have issues with him. Would it be the best, and only a devotee can really appreciate Krishna, you know, one who is in love with Krishna can really appreciate his contradictory nature. So would you advise that if somebody is of that background, that best not to try to explain about Krishna's glory, or is it just better to encourage them to, you know, worship Lord Ram and try to?
The problem, I guess we're talking about the Indian context, so I'll answer it in the Indian context. I was reading the Ramayana the other day from Bhakti Vikas Maharaj. And on the first page he says, there is no such thing as Lakshman Rekha in the Ramayana. And I was scandalized. I grew up hearing that, you know, so much has been made of that. And it's not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. The trouble with the Indians is that folklore has become mixed with Shastra. So Prabhupada established Shastra, and what is the Shastra? It's Bhagavad Gita. Once you understand the Bhagavad Gita, you can understand the Ramayana. If you don't understand the Bhagavad Gita, you cannot understand the Ramayana. So, who spoke the Bhagavad Gita? It's Krishna. So it almost is obligatory for Indians, even though they might be Ram worshippers, to actually understand Lord Ram's position by understanding the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, they cannot understand it. I mean, the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, has been
commented on by scores of even devotees. But Prabhupada's uniqueness was emphasizing that Lord Ram is not material. He's spiritual. He's transcendental. Philosophy is lost when there is a tradition of just hearing the pastimes without understanding the philosophical foundations. So, what do we understand from them? It's not just for entertainment. They are purifying, of course. But the philosophical understanding helps us advance rapidly. So, now, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishthan. I mean, Krishna is the source of Lord Ram. So, you know, who is Lord Ram? If that question arises, he's God. Okay, but then who is Vamandeva? And who is Narsingadeva? We have to have some philosophical framework in understanding their relationships with each other. It's not possible to do that unless you come to the point that Krishna is the source of all this. Then the problem becomes, then I don't accept Lord Ram either because he's Krishna and look at what Krishna did. So I don't think there is any way out for Indians. They have to accept Krishna's supremacy and then approach Lord Ram in that philosophical context, that framework. Lord Ram cannot be, because Krishna is the source, right? We know that. That's what the Shastra establishes. So how can you? Yeah, I mean, that's my view. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe there's another way of thinking about this.
One time I was hearing a tape of Radha Govinda Maharaj, and he was telling the story at a home program, and one person was very challenging and asking him, you know, why did Krishna marry 16,100 wives? And he was like in a very offensive mood. And then Maharaj said, well, why are you talking? He didn't take your wife. And then after saying that, then he said, but you're to be accused because you have taken his wife, you know. All the women, everybody, all women belong to him. So actually you have, you're married to one and you have taken one of his wife. So people can be very challenging sometimes.
I think Prabhupada did the same thing. Prabhupada also said the same thing. Yeah. Mataji, Hare Krishna.
Just appreciating the word that you used to explain the relationship, you know, the word caring. Because generally people get into that sense of, you know, well, this person's right, or, you know. But even with Srila Prabhupada, accepting his instruction because he's guru, came from such a complete sense of love and trust that we knew he had our best interests in mind. So we were willing to do whatever he asked, whatever it was, staying out from early morning to, you know, till night. Distributing his books, we had that much faith and trust in him. There was even one article in the Science of Self-Realization where a woman met some young devotees in a parking lot distributing books. So she started asking them, you know, about the philosophy and realized that they didn't really know that much. So she wrote to Srila Prabhupada, you know, and asking him, why is it, how could this be? Here they are. They're distributing your books, but they don't really know that much about what they're doing. And Prabhupada explained it's because they had so much faith, they had so much love, and that please forgive them for any, you know, naiveness, but, you know, because of their dedication. So it's the same with husband and wife, really, that it's not like I'm the boss, you have to do what I say so much. It's more like the wife has so much faith and trust in the husband to lead her properly that she's happy to follow him. So, and you're just appreciating that with caring.
Yeah, maybe this is a controversial topic and I should shut my mouth now, but the Bhagavatam is a book on bhakti, but it's also a book on philosophy. And in the philosophy, when it's explained, one should not become a dancing dog, you know those verses. You shouldn't just be dancing at the commands of your wife, get out of the home, submit to Krishna, surrender your life, and so on and so forth. So there are jnani aspects to the Bhagavatam, and there is bhakti in Bhagavatam. And depending on the inclination of the devotees, they can pick and choose Prabhupada's comments and statements in such a way that they become jnanis without realizing it. Although they are practicing devotional service, they are purely on the jnan platform. In devotional service, there has to be love for Krishna's devotees. And that love is all-encompassing. It encompasses animals and trees and women, your wife. But when we become jnanis, then we become hard-hearted. And then there comes niyam agraha. Emphasizing niyam without understanding the purpose of the niyam. So, this is as an observer. I have been observing the devotees for 7 years now. And this is, I try to classify everything, and this is my classification. There are jnani devotees, where the jnana is predominant, and there are bhakti devotees, where the bhakti is predominant. And the best is, when jnana is born out of bhakti, rather than the other way around. We focus on jnana and practice small amount of bhakti. Janayati ashu vairagyam jnanam ahetukam. Right? Vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita. Janayati ashu vairagyam. On its own, the vairagya will come, the jnana will come. So in the context of a marriage, when both husband and wife are practicing devotional service, and devotional service alone, then slowly vairagya will come and jnana will also come. These are byproducts of bhakti. And so, that's I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but that's my rationalization. So if we can just pull ourselves away from just being hard-hearted jnanis, vairagis, to being bhaktas, having a balance between the two, then I think it's good. Otherwise, we just become hard-hearted, sticking to principles and neglect caring for others, become neglectful and perhaps even disdainful for an entire, social stratum. That's my view on this. Comment by Prabhuji. I knew this was controversial. No, please use the microphone. People are listening.
I didn't hear clearly what Mataji was discussing with you about Ram. But are you saying, or is it discussed that if somebody is conscious of Ram at the time of death, they wouldn't get mukti?
That's not the point. They will. But they have to know who Ram is and what his position is. If Ram Leela is part of our entertainment, then it's not going to work. Because I don't know how it will work. Purification occurs not just by you have to have a guru who explains the position of Lord Ram to you. Why are we here? These philosophical aspects have to be there also, together with hearing the Leela. If the Leela is heard without philosophy, then it can become, it doesn't necessarily become, but it can become just entertainment. I mean, look at the Ramananda Sagar, he made this Ramayana. What was it made for? It was made to make money. It wasn't made to preach and make devotees, right? And the traffic would stop in India and everybody would watch that. And I watched it growing up. TV had started at that time when I was young. And then I watched the Mahabharata growing up. And I came to the US and I had no interest in Krishna or Ram. It was fun. It became part of the cultural experience I had. It's my culture. But it didn't take me to transcendence. Even though I was listening to the katha and I grew up in that culture, I was not a devotee. I was not even interested in devotional matters. I didn't even know if there is such a thing as transcendence. So where does that come from? Once we know that, then we have a mission. It is not just part of our culture, but we transcend our culture. The Ramayana is not a cultural thing. It's a transcendental thing. But it has become a cultural thing in India. But it has become restricted to that. And then, so therefore, the people are not able to take full advantage of it.
But just in case the practitioner knows that Ram is God, then they can attain mukti also.
Well, mukti is not our goal. But yeah, I mean, they can become liberated if they're completely conscious of Ram. If they become devotees of Ram, Lord Ram, yes, of course.
I got a little worried because when my mom was dying, she was chanting, "Hey Ram, Hey Ram."
Oh yeah, I mean, she's liberated.
She might be left.
She's gone back to Godhead. I wish I could do that. I'm probably going to chant, "Hey iPhone" or something. Become a platinum chip next life. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.